the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
I'm Charlie McCarron.
And I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And today we are going to talk about Magical Athlete.
Athlete? Sorry.
Yes, Magical Athlete. So Magical Athlete is a remake of an old game. And it is basically a roll and move game.
Yep.
You roll a die, you move around a track, first person to reach the finish line gets first place and gets some points. The game takes place over four different races, two that take place in the Mild Milds, which is a very boring board where there's nothing special about it at all. Yep. And the other race takes place in the Wild Wilds, which is a special board where some of the spaces do things when you land on them. For example, get a point or move forward some number of spaces or trip and miss your next turn.
Or move back a number of spaces, the best one.
Or move back a number of spaces, yes. Now, the thing that makes Magical Athlete interesting is that you have four racers for the whole game, one for each of the four races, and your racers each have unique powers, which can be very, very different from each other. For example, here, give me some examples, Charlie.
Yes. Scoocher.
Yeah, so we've got, like, Scoocher. When another racer's power happens, I move one. You've got the coach. Every one on my space gets plus one to their main move, including me. You've got, Blimp. When I start my turn before the second corner of the track is sort of it goes around the edges of a board. I get plus three to my main move on or after that corner, minus one. The mouth just eliminates players when they land on them and they're alone. So you've got a bunch of these racers. I think there's 36 or
something. Something around there, yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of them. And at the very start of the game, before you do anything else, you draft your entire team of four racers in two rounds of a snake draft. And then once you've drafted them, you start going through the races one by one. And in each race, you choose one of your racers, and that's the one for the race. You make this choice simultaneously, so you don't know what other people are choosing. And that is pretty much the game. And what's interesting about this game is the setup does not sound that interesting, because the whole game is, aside from the beginning, you know, all the big choices are at the beginning, and then the whole game is just roll the die and move. But this game is actually fantastic.
yeah.
Seeing how things unfold, how different abilities interact with each other, trying to activate your ability, but they just got too far ahead of you and you have to pass them to activate your ability.
Yeah. I have to say, the first time I played was with some other game designers, and we all thought it was hilarious. But the first time I played, I was like, oh man, this game is too long, because they had some powers that would like pull you back, and it was going to take forever to finish.
And that was the old version.
That was the old version. And yep. Now this version, which I think Richard Garfield had a hand in. But yeah, there was some changes made, and I really thought it was really fun. It's definitely like the most I've laughed playing a game in a while, probably since Thunder Road Vendetta. We were laughing at that game.
The powers often interact in very interesting ways.
Yeah.
Like having, for example, Scoocher, whose power triggers whenever someone else's power triggers.
It was so satisfying.
And the coach, Scoocher, for instance.
Yes. Oh, yes. Scoocher was in the same game as the coach and the romantic.
Yeah.
The coach's power basically triggers whenever you take your turn.
Or whenever someone takes a turn that you're with.
Right.
Yeah.
And the romantic's power triggers whenever two people are alone on the same space.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sort of just propelled Scoocher all the way to the end, because powers just kept on triggering.
Yeah. I probably moved two-thirds of the time. My moves were just like little scooting along from my power.
And you even won by being stunned or tripped.
Yeah.
Had to stand up before he could do anything else.
Yep.
And actually just scooted his way into the finish line, which is just so funny.
So yep. Watching the powers interact in this game is super fun.
Yeah.
I would compare it to like, it reminds me a little bit of in Galaxy Trucker, mm-hmm. where you watch when, you know, they're
destroyed.
Yeah, they're asteroids and you watch, yeah. and it's fun to see how the ship breaks up.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like that, looking at different things interacting and seeing what happens. It's the joy of seeing what happens.
And, you know, waiting for, because a lot of abilities use the die result to determine if your ability kicks off. So you're attentive to everyone's die results to see if your ability happens. And so you're constantly engaged, seeing if anything messed up what you were trying to do, even though you have no choice in what happens.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. a computer could resolve the entire thing once you choose the four racers.
Yeah.
As long as you choose which racer goes to which race, that's it.
Yeah. So I have my own theory about why this game works. I was curious to hear you guys, like, why do you think this works?
I think the chaos is a big part of it, right? You want to have a good amount of chaos if you're going to have it basically be telling a story, right? Even though it's not an actual narrative story, you're seeing what's happening. Like, our first game was very boring, like our first match, our first race, but we were still waiting for our abilities to kick off, and I was almost catching up. So I felt a little bit of tension, like, oh, am I going to pass someone and finally boost them back two spaces? I didn't.
Yeah.
But
and then at the very end, I was Sisyphus and I rolled a 6.
Yeah.
I was like right next to the finish line.
Which meant that he went back to the start and lost a victory point.
Yeah.
And then while sitting at the start, he rolled another 6 and lost a victory point.
I was like, oh my goodness, so just satisfying. Crossed the victory line already.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me, why it works is, this... is very focused. Like, if there's a lot of games that have a lot of cool powers that have fun combos, but sometimes there's so many other things going on in the game, mm-hmm. that when those things happen, it's like almost diluted because there's so many things. But this is just so focused on like
the power,
what's
going to
happen with these four powers that are in the game.
Oh,
you have an identity as the player. This is what I do.
Yeah.
This round.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And there's like nothing else in the game. It's just roll and move and see if your power goes off.
Yep. Right. Well, and like honestly, when, you know, for a specific instance, when Ananda had you were the partier, the party animal.
Party animal. Yeah.
And then Charlie was the mouth. The party animal drew everyone towards him and the mouth ate them.
Yeah. Such and so a good like combo.
Constantly the mouth was chasing the party animal.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like key characters that I think would be fun. Just totally changed the playing field too.
Yeah.
Like the mouth. Suddenly, wait, a player can get eliminated?
Yeah.
I didn't see any of the cards like that.
Nope.
The other one that Trevor had was Stickler.
Yeah.
At the end of the race, other players have to roll exactly the right amount to go to the end or they don't move. And
so
the whole time.
Stunned.
Yeah. And Ananda was like, please, mouth.
While the mouth is trying to get them
to get rid of that ability.
No, the Stickler was horrible for me because party animal gets +1 movement.
Right. For everyone.
For everyone on their space.
Yep.
So if everyone's on my space, which they will be at the end of the game, I just can't cross the finish line because I'm always going to overshoot it.
Right.
So. My theory for why this game works so well, and I think this is probably my big takeaway from Magical Athlete, because it's the game that got me thinking a bit about this.
Sure.
I think choices do not directly create engagement. I think that choices create emotional investment in specific parts of the game, and that it is emotional investment that creates engagement. So in most games, you're making choices all the time.
Right.
And whatever you're making a choice about, you become emotionally invested in. I think there's like this psychology thing called the endowment effect,
okay.
where when people choose things, they suddenly care a lot more about those things and are less willing to give them up because it's like become part of their identity in a sense.
Sure.
And I think the same thing happens. This is my theory. I think the same thing happens in games. When we make choices, we become emotionally invested in the things we're making choices about. And so then when we see things happen to those, we care about it.
Mm.
And in Magical Athlete specifically, this is relevant because you make almost all of your choices at the very beginning of the game, but you are then invested in your racers for the whole game. So even though you're not making any further choices...
Well, you do choose who races when.
You do choose who races then, yes. Yeah.
So like, who would be best here?
Yeah, you're sort of reinforcing the effect.
Yeah. Yep.
But that's important because it means that if you want to keep players engaged, you don't necessarily need to have them making choices all the time.
Right.
You just need to find a way to make them invested in whatever's happening.
Yeah, that's a really good takeaway. I like it. And yeah, it's making me think now too, like sometimes you're flooded with so many choices, you don't actually get a chance to be emotionally invested because,
right,
again, kind of like what I was saying, it sometimes it gets diluted by all the different things going on in a game. And yeah, again, the focus in this makes me think like, yeah, maybe make players make more important decisions. Like, since there is really one main decision, it is the most important influential decision you make, yeah, in the whole game, who you pick as your character. So maybe fewer choices, but more important to gameplay.
Yeah.
What? Same, actually, this factors into challengers too, where it's like you're only getting one or two more cards between rounds, mm-hmm, so that card you pick is really important to how your deck's going to play out.
Yeah, especially if you're starting to weed out the things in your deck too, so your deck's getting smaller, so that one extra card is going to be huge.
And I
think it's very important choices. And also choices that touch all parts of the game. Because in a lot of games, you know, people are doing their own thing over here, mm-hmm, and you're doing your own thing over here, and you don't care about their thing.
Yeah.
Because none of your choices are touching, like, their board or what have you.
Yeah. There's no interaction.
Right, which creates downtime because during their turn, there's nothing they have that you care about. Yep. When you have a shared board, it's a lot easier because everything's taking place on the same board. So they're more likely to be interacting with the pieces that you've sort of imbued with your emotional value.
Yeah. And almost every ability seems to have some kind of interaction in some way. Not all of them, but a lot of them do.
What other players are doing.
Yeah, with what they have, what they roll, if you pass them, if you land on the same space as them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, where they are so you can trade spaces with them. You know, like, there's just a lot of, you care about what the other players are doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't need all of them to interact. You just need some critical mass. I mean, it's sort of like we were talking about with choices. Mm-hmm. Not every card needs, just a tiny amount of choices during the game has a disproportionate impact on your perception of agency, like in challengers, which is also the case in here. There are some powers that have some small, minor, often trivial choices. The majority of them do not, but
And in hindsight, you know, I will say that the feedback loop is not super advantageous for this game because you make the decision once and now you have these characters,
right?
And in theory they all have some kind of balance to them, or, you know, but you can't really affect other people because, you know, you never know what other people are choosing either. So you're just kind of hope and see what happens.
Yeah.
But I do think my takeaway is going to be exactly kind of what you're talking about. The interaction and having a high interaction between the cards, especially when you have a simple game that's auto battling, make it so that your, even if it's a random result, a die roll, a card draw, the simple thing that happens interacts with someone instantly. And there's something, there's an exchange there that happens. Just so you can have that share in that moment together in one way or another, good thing, bad thing. And as long as it's quick and resolves quickly, bad things, I think, are great in this game still, or in this kind of field.
Yeah.
Yep.
My takeaway is a little different. My takeaway is the art in this. But more so just thinking about how an illustration can do so much for a game,
mm-hmm,
where, for example, I chose the blimp because it had a hilarious illustration of a blimp exploding, and the blimp has a face on it. But more, the art, if you haven't seen it, is like old school cartoon from like the 70s or something. But each of these abilities, if you just imagine these cards without an illustration, and they're kind of boring. It's like, oh, move a space if something happens.
Right.
Yeah, the blimp's ability is move three spaces ahead until you get to the second half of the board, and then
with each roll,
with your rolls, you're moving one
plus
less.
Three.
And it's like that if I just read that text, I'd be like, eh, that's okay. But because it's a blimp exploding, I had this story now in my head of like, oh, the blimp is
so efficient
doing
at first,
so well, and then it
explodes.
Explodes on the second half. So, yeah, that's my takeaway. You know, when you're designing something, be thinking about, like, what is the most value you could get out of your art that could tell a story, and just a name of a card plus the art can do so much.
Well, and honestly, all of the cards feel like they tie in. The art and the ability feels like a great tie-in to each other. I rarely saw one that didn't make sense or wasn't like, oh, yeah, that's funny. Sisyphus is hilarious. Like, you see the guy holding up the stone, the rock, and, you know, he's pushing the rock uphill, and then he rolls a six, and then he starts all the way back at the bottom. It's like, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
The art is really great for this game.
Also, just to say it, the custom-cut meeples and printed meeples.
Yeah.
Like 36 unique
that match
custom everything.
I think it's 36.
Ish, yeah, whatever. Yep.
I might be making up numbers. But also the game makes no attempt that I can see to balance the racers, and it's kind of okay. I mean
when you're rolling a d6 to see how much you move, it's only so much balancing you need.
And
to
there's
do.
And how many spaces on the board? Like 50 or something? 25? 50?
I'm not sure.
50 probably.
But also, there's a snake draft at the start, which I think helps a lot with that. Because, you know, even if some of the racers seem way, way better than others, it's a snake draft. So,
So one person has a great one and a horrible one in theory.
And in fact, because it is a draft, there should be some that seem better anyways.
Right.
Because how else would you choose?
Yeah, if they all seem the same.
Other than the, oh, this art looks more fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sure that when the mouth comes out, everyone's going to be like, oh, I need to grab that one because it's going to kill other players.
Yeah.
Whether or not you're going to, now, win or not.
And Charlie, you played the old one, right?
Yeah.
And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that one of the major differences between this and the old one is there was some sort of bidding system or something?
There was some currency, I think. Maybe. I just remember, I think there was more mean effects in the old one.
Okay.
And I would be very curious to hear how they chose the characters they did.
I think the snake draft is new.
Yeah, that might be.
But it's pretty great. I mean,
yeah,
it fits really well in the game and with the characters. One interesting thing, the context of each race affects how well a racer will do because of the interactions between the powers. And the choice of what racer to use is simultaneous.
Yep.
So I was wondering what you guys think about that. Like, I can imagine a world where, like, you choose your racer in turn order. And so you might choose to counter.
If Charlie shows the mouth, then I definitely don't want to use my ones that get drawn to something else or draw others to me.
But that's not how it works in the game.
No.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it's simultaneous because you could definitely overthink. And some of them would be, I was thinking about it as I drafted things, thinking like, ooh, I hope this one lines up with the one that Ananda picked.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I think it didn't necessarily. But it did line up. Well,
Scooter was
fun
the MVP.
No matter what, because anytime someone uses their power, you get to go a space.
But that first game we played, power's almost never activated. It felt like, at least.
Because we put all our stupid racers first.
Yeah, just to test out the system.
That's what I was.
Yep, Banana Centaur.
Make people trip.
Yeah, well, and also the order in which we went meant that...
you got ahead and just stayed ahead.
And yeah, until I rolled a six.
Well,
cool.
Yeah, I think... did we hit all our points we wanted to hit?
Yeah.
I will say, just with the vibe of this game, I think it does a great job matching the vibe of the artwork to the mechanics to the components. Like, I think everything just ties in really nicely. And I think that's part of what makes it fun, too, is it, like, shows you something, and that is your expectation, and it delivers on that and a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important, too. Also, having the two maps... I was a little concerned when I first saw the map. I'm like, literally, it's just a racetrack that we go to the end and we just have one power each. Like, that just didn't seem like enough. And then we flipped it over and it was like really chaotic. I'm like, okay, now this is a little bit more interesting. More stuff is happening. And now I know which characters I want to use for different types of maps. It's like, okay, this actually has more going on than I originally thought. And it was just enough to be really engaging for me.
Yeah, maybe that's a good thing to think about, is like, set the expectations low. then the game's better than...
Set the vibe equal to what you're going for.
Yeah.
Yep.
It makes sense.
If it's an extreme tactical game and you have fluffy bunnies on the cover that are really like happy, joyful, that can be tougher.
Bunny Kingdom. Richard Garfield. Interesting choice.
I still haven't actually played Bunny. I played Killer Bunnies, but not Bunny
Root,
Kingdom.
Or Root, right?
Yeah.
Root,
we were just
really
talking about that. Or maybe I was talking about that with Liz, I think. About how Root, people expect that it's going to be lighter because of the art is cute animals. And they kind of get tricked into learning a very heavy game. but they still enjoy it,
But they still enjoy it. Because it's like, ooh, the little cat's building their little... it's great.
Cool. On that note, that's Magical Athlete. And tune in next time for...
Tag Team.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.